even more?
Tell me of war.
Tell you of war? Well, it usually starts with a whacking great explosion.
I'm Andrea Johnson, and you're listening to Retro Rockets. Join us as we explore the deep heritage of science fiction and fantasy, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Welcome aboard. Our guest today is Dr. Amy H. Sturgis. Amy, welcome to Retro Rockets. Would you like to introduce yourself and let our listeners know where they can find you online?
Yes, thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here. I am Amy, as you've already said. I earned my PhD in intellectual history, which is the history of ideas, from Vanderbilt University. I currently teach undergraduate classes at Lenoir Ryan University and graduate classes at Signum University. I'm also on staff on the science fiction podcast Starship Sofa, where I contribute a looking back at genre history segment. And I'm editor-in-chief of Hocus Pocus Comics, and I'm delighted to be here. And you can find me online at my website, which is amyhsturgis.com. It has information about my podcast episodes and my publications, both articles and books and other things. And quite a few of my publications are online, and there are links there to those. And you can also find me at Twitter at drahsturgis.
Fantastic. Thank you. Hearing you describe more of what you're involved in, I'm realizing I really should have sent you a lot more interview questions. But we'll get through what we can in the next 40 or so minutes. I was drawn to you because you have one of my absolute dream jobs. You get to teach science fiction history. And that's all of my favorite things. It's science fiction, it's teaching, it's watching students have those light bulb moments. And I was introduced to your work through some friends of mine that were talking about lectures you had given and classes you had taught about Star Wars. I'm a child of the 80s. I cut my teeth on watching, you know, my parents had recorded movies on VHS off TV. So I grew up watching Star Wars. What's your history with Star Wars and what got you interested in teaching about it?
Well, first of all, thank you. I sort of have my dream job too, so I feel very blessed every day. I can't talk really about my history with Star Wars without first mentioning Star Trek, because that's where my love of science fiction began. I think I was listening to reruns of the original series from the womb. And I know I was watching episodes, reruns of the original series from the moment my eyes opened. I think there was a time in my life I thought the word TV meant Star Trek. And so I was watching reruns of the original series and then also the animated series in its original run at the same time. And I was instantly hooked. I was a devoted fan. And so that relationship with Star Trek first put me in mind of all of the metaphors and ideas that came with science fiction. So in 1977, I was able to convince my parents that because I loved Star Trek so much, at the ripe old age of 5, I was old enough to go to the movie theater and see Star Wars. And so they took me not once, but 6 times. And it really changed my life. And so from there on out, you know, I went to elementary school with Leia buns in my hair and Chewbacca knee socks. And it was sort of inevitable that then I would find Mary Shelley, Madeline L'Engle, Ray Bradbury, Frank Herbert, and be raised, in a sense, by science fiction authors. Plus, the great authors who wrote Star Trek novels, who then, you know, invited me into their own work, like Vonda McIntyre and Diane Duane and people like that. So then I'm interested from the start in ideas. And as I grew up and realized I really wanted to stay in the academy. I wanted to research. I wanted to write. I wanted to share my research and writing by teaching and encouraging other people to research and find love in the same things that I loved. I realized there's nothing better to study if you're interested in intellectual history than science fiction, because science fiction is the genre in which ideas are the heroes. So I often talk about how science fiction is both a reflection and a propulsion, in the sense that science fiction at any point is telling you about that era's, the era that produced that science fiction, that era's values and anxieties and concerns and, you know, issues. And so in that sense, it's a mirror to the time in which it's produced. But science fiction also doesn't want passive audience members. Science fiction is a call to action. It's inviting people to be involved and to create difference. And so in that sense, it's also propulsion. It's a, you know, proverbial kick in the pants to look at your world in a different way and imagine better or imagine differently. And so I realized science fiction was a perfect subject for my study and my work. And to go back to your question about Star Wars, I ended up teaching a lot of, and I do teach a lot of multidisciplinary humanities-based, research-based classes. Most of the classes I teach invite a student to be a part of an ongoing conversation with common texts, but also to start a research project that they complete over the course of the semester and then present back to their classmates. And Star Wars, for example, is such a great invitation to students, welcome to students to think about things in a lot of ways. Because first of all, everything you're interested in is in Star Wars. So one week we could be talking about, you know, the prequels and how the extended study of Palpatine becoming emperor is a commentary, intentional commentary, about the idea of history repeating itself with republics or democracies voting away their rights and voting in tyrants. And so we can talk about Caesar and Napoleon and Hitler through the lens of Palpatine, and you've got a history lesson, and you've got a political science lesson, and you've got this opportunity to see a story that everybody already knows as a gateway into thinking about a lot of big topics. But then the next week we could be talking about, you know, the sequel trilogy and talk about the philosophy of, you know, free will versus the chosen one, you know, determinism, fate, and where do you fall on the idea of your choice and destiny and how much you can shape your own life and how your decisions have consequences. So you can do a little bit of everything. And with students, I found they are very interested in sort of lining up either their passions, their personal interests, or also their, you know, majors, the fields that they want to study. You can find everything in a field, in something like Star Wars. You can find nursing and medical science topics, and you can find issues about social justice, or you can find, you know, questions about physics or biology. So that's also just a lovely way to harness pre-existing enthusiasm and, yes, have a kind of cool factor, you know, with the nerd kids.
It makes it fun. Yeah,
exactly.
It makes it fun.
Absolutely. It's a great, great opportunity, I think.
Two things you mentioned really caught my attention just now. The fascinating discussion about how Palpatine gets to where he is and that he's legally voted in. There's an indie rock song that came out, I don't know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago. I don't know if any of your students have brought this up. It might be something to mention. It's called Handlebars by the Flowbots.
And I'm taking notes.
And it's just this, it starts out very simple, and it's just this very fun rock song about someone who has the ability to gain just a tiny bit of power, and how easily things get out of control.
That sounds perfect.
Yes, and that song always comes to my mind when I'm watching that scene in the prequels.
Oh, thank you. That sounds like something I need to bring into the conversation for sure.
If I can, I'll look for a YouTube link and I'll email it to you.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, you had also mentioned, you know, do you have free will? Do you have destiny? How do you decide what direction to go? I am 100% a sucker for any kind of hero's journey type story. And I think at, you know, 6 or 7 years old, when I'm, you know, watching Star Wars I'm too young to understand what's happening, but my brain is just old enough to realize these people are on a hero's journey. And as I've aged and, you know, learned more about the hero's journey and read a lot of mythology retellings, what I'm so fascinated by is those characters are trapped in that story. You know, like retellings of Greek mythology, retellings of any mythology. They're because the story has to go a certain direction. It has to. It's mythology. It's already been told a million times. The story has to go that direction. Those characters are trapped in it. And I love what you're talking about with, you know, yes, people have free will, but they're the chosen one. To me, that's that beautiful dichotomy between, can you control your own ending?
Right. Absolututely. And I think Star Wars is doing some very interesting things now mm-hmm. by focusing on characters who aren't the chosen ones.
Mm-hmm.
And Rogue One is high on my list of Star Wars narratives for that reason. Well, for many, many reasons. But characters who could opt out in a way that someone, for example, born into the Skywalker saga could not opt out. And so what does it tell us about a different kind of heroism for those people to still be all in, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, for those people, they have every day they wake up and they can walk away.
Exactly.
So what do they do? And it's like, you know, like, I'm not a hero. Every day I wake up. And it's, am I going to do the hard thing or am I going to walk away? I get to choose every single day.
Right. And who do you want to be?
Exactly.
What do you want your story?
Exactly. Uh-huh. Okay, so apparently I need to sign up for one of your classes.
It sounds like you could teach one of my classes. I love this. This is fantastic. I'm taking notes here.
I really miss academia. I super miss it. I'm fascinated to know a little bit more about what types of students take your class and how they react to it. Is when you meet your students on the first day of class and you start to get to know everybody, is it mostly already sci-fi fans? Are you getting, you know, someone that says, yeah, I used to watch Star Trek with my dad, but I haven't watched it in a long time? Are you getting students who are like, yeah, I just need an English credit or I just need a history credit? What kind of students do you typically work with, and what's their reaction to realizing that they really do get to do fun, nerdy things?
Well, I sort of teach two different kinds of classes, and some are the big, large-scale intellectual histories, like the history of science fiction, which I teach over a 2-semester period, or related sort of genre works like the dystopian tradition, which I teach as science fiction, and getting ready to teach for the first time a new offering, Dark Academia, which is also very related to science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So those people tend to be more, I'm not quite sure what's going on here, but it sounds interesting, which is totally fair. But then I also teach these topics specific courses like Star Wars, Star Trek. I've taught Sherlock Holmes and Tales of Ratiocination and a Harry Potter class, a Tolkien class. But my main focus right now is Star Wars, just because there's quite a lot of demand. I'm teaching it right now. I've taught two sections In the spring, I'm going to be teaching two sections in the fall. It's thrilling to me. A lot of people seem to be interested in the class, but for example, the Star Wars class, there tend to be a lot of students who are already very interested, and so they're the sort of big fans who come in, and you know they know what their interests are, and they've got lots of things they want to discuss. But one of the things I was surprised by over time, I've realized this is a constant in the Star Wars class in particular. So many people have not really grown up with it or are familiar with it, but they love someone and want to connect to someone who is, who does, I should say. So it's a very personal thing. It's a parent. It's a boyfriend or girlfriend, or you know, some kind of significant other, roommate, someone they're trying to build a bridge to. They love this. I love them. Therefore,
this love that,
and it's incredibly touching to me. Coming from you know, my parents are fans. Now, my sister, little sister, is a fan. My brother-in-law is a fan. My baby nieces, you know, carry around baby Grogu. plushes. So coming from sort of a multi-generational Star Wars family, I find it really moving to see that it's often either I grew up with this, this has been a part of my family, or it's a part of my family or friend or inner circle that I don't have access to. And so I want to reach that someone I love through this. And that's even changed the way I think about Star Wars and Star Trek too, for that matter. Something that's a loved thing, they want to be a loved thing held in common, you know?
I think you've just made every calculus professor incredibly jealous. I love math. I finally understand calculus, but I don't think they get to have this kind of experience. You're listening to Retro Rockets. Our guest today is Dr. Amy H. Sturgis, who teaches graduate and undergraduate classes on the history of science fiction and the history of ideas. You can listen to this and other episodes at retrorockets.podbean.com. You get fans in your classes, and you get people who want to better connect with the fans in their families. I've noticed I was going through a lot of your material and a lot of the lectures that you've given, and you've also given lectures about fandom and fandom communities. I recently joined a new fandom community. I've had good experiences in fandom. I've had iffy and negative experiences in fandom. I'd love to ask you about some of what you've learned about fandom and what you talk about, and just kind of the history of all of that.
Oh, thank you. Yes. So I discovered fan fiction as a young teen, reading an article in Enterprise Incidents, the fan magazine for Star Trek. And it was a sort of expose. Did you know there are people out there doing this? And you have to understand, this is the 80s. So this is where fan fiction is mimeographed, you know, zines that are either sent through the mail or in a cardboard box behind the table of a vendor at a live convention. That you have to ask for. Can I see the
Wait, are you card? Are you saying there was a time when the internet and AO3 didn't exist?
It was a dark time before AO3, but yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. So I was captivated that other people were putting on paper what I did, you know, almost every night in my head as I was going to sleep writing these stories. And then I was very fortunate that a combination of a great science fiction bookstore, shout out to Starbase 21 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and their related science fiction convention, Trek Expo, which happened every year. It was something that, you know, my parents were very excited to encourage me to check out. And so I was going to that bookstore. I was going to the convention every year. And so I sort of grew up in my teen years in this early pre-internet fandom. And I was influenced by scholar Henry Jenkins, who sort of helped popularize the term ACAFAN, an academic who's also a fan who studies fandom. And I and his work like Textual Poachers, which was a very influential work of scholarship for me. And so I've gone on, I've written, I've published a journal article and a book chapter on Tolkien fan fiction. And the way fans particularly have looked at gender, or fans have looked at making original texts and then film adaptations speak to each other through fan fiction. And I've also published work on Louis McMaster Bujold. As a historian, most of my favorite people are dead, but Louis McMaster Bujold happens to be, fortunately for all of us, alive and one of my very favorite science fiction authors. And she grew up writing fan fiction and has then been, as an award-winning science fiction and fantasy author, very encouraging of fans, but also aware that, for example, fan fiction has served as something like a reader response laboratory, not just training ground for people who would go on to be professional writers and artists and editors and people involved in creative pursuits themselves, but also as a way to see what happens in people's heads as they are, in a sense, co-producing story with the story creators. And so how valuable it is to see where people perceive flaws or holes that need to be patched up, or mistakes that need to be unmade, or gaps that should be filled, that sort of thing. And so I find it very interesting to see the back and forth between fans and creators. And certainly we wouldn't have certain great storytelling. We wouldn't have Star Trek at all as we know it without some of the first really great, aggressive, tireless fan campaigns to keep Star Trek on the air, then to bring it back, then to prove there was a market for more. And now we're living in a time with Star Trek, with Star Wars, with Doctor Who, with Tolkien stories, where we have people who are creators or adapters who grew up as fans first, and now are the professional makers of these stories. And so I find it, all of those interactions, really interesting. And I think there's a lot of conversations there that are relevant to science fiction itself, because I see science fiction too, historically, as a conversation. And you really can't even study or talk about science fiction without talking about conventions that go all the way back to the 1930s. And the way fans and creators have always been kind of a blurry line, right? So so I do like to bring that into my classes, and I also like to work on that in my scholarship, because I take all of that very seriously. And I also take Neil Gaiman's point that it's all fan fiction really quite seriously too. So thank you for asking me about that.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. It's and I love that you mentioned that science fiction is an ongoing conversation. You phrase it so much more eloquently than I've been able to in the past. I've always viewed science fiction and, you know, fantasy retellings and fantasy as well as this area where we're always pushing the envelope, we're always pushing the edges.
Right.
And that the edges do get pushed, because that's literally the goal. And now we have new edges to explore. And it's having joined a new fandom recently, I'm seeing everything you just described in the community, in the fan fiction. It's people who love the work explaining why things are happening through storytelling, you know, scenes that were never filmed, relationships that were never explored. And it's, oh, that's why. And I feel like they're writing this mythology in reverse. And I cannot get enough of it.
That's beautiful what you just said, right? That's exactly what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone comes to these texts with different tools, mm-hmm. and different experiences, mm-hmm. and different lenses, and so they see different things. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be a place where that variety and that diversity is celebrated, because you want to see what you love,
yes.
in three dimensions and Technicolor, and you want to see every bit of it analyzed and celebrated and expounded upon. And so to have all of those different people sort of crowdsource your story, you know?
Exactly. I love, and I was just thinking the same term, crowdsourcing, because it's, and you had mentioned this as well, that in fan fiction, people can explore what works, what doesn't work, what needs to work better, and the conversation around what the writer of the fan fiction came up with allows more people to crowdsource what, you know, what works and what doesn't. And it's so wonderful that so many creators now grew up with fan fiction. It's an inspiration to young people who are just, you know, teenagers, 20-somethings, whatever age someone is, when they discover something new that they love, it's now become very acceptable of someone cutting their teeth on writing fan fiction, because so many creators today, that's what they did.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if we had that, or at least had a way to communicate that in a global way in the 80s and 90s, and we have that now.
Yes, 100% agree.
Yeah. Speaking of 80s and 90s and the O's, I was in college in the late 90s and the early O's, and it may have just been the degree field that I was in. It may have been that, you know, we still signed up for classes on paper at the time, but I don't remember any good options, like any fascinating options for history or history of ideas or history of literature. Like, I don't want to diss my alma mater, but there was not a lot of fun stuff happening. And there might be now, I don't know. How did you convince a university that you should be allowed to teach something so cool?
I'm trying to look back through the attic of my memory and remember about that. I did have the good fortune of sort of starting out with classes as sort of the new person. The other people didn't want to teach. And so a lot of those were, and it turns out it's something I absolutely love to do. So I'm well suited for those classes that are considered to be, you know, by other people sort of a punishment. But particularly the first year experience, the capstone experience kinds of classes that are humanities. And yes, people sort of have to take them. You're supposed to do a major research project, or you're supposed to find out how different disciplines look at things. But I sort of came into that thinking you may be doing it wrong in the sense that, you know, if you pick something like, I'm trying to think of the most boring thing possible. I actually can't, but
my economics, whatever, for me, at least, was the most boring class I ever took.
Oh, there you go. So it'd be something like, you know, economics of railways or something, you know, that would be like, oh gosh, you know, watching paint dry would be an improvement over this. And I just wonder why in my free time, I'm reading this stuff, you know, and it, one of the first ones I tried that was a bit controversial at the time, but it was, the books just started coming out, was the series wasn't even completed, Harry Potter. But I was pointing out that if you look at, there was a, I think, a Ways of Knowing class. And so you were supposed to, you know, every week look at something from a different point of view. And at the time I was reading the Harry Potter series, and I was thinking, well, you know, here you have the classic mystery. And here you have the gothic ghost story, and here you have the school days coming of age story, and here you have something different every way you look at it. And so you could just take that from saying there's actually multiple genres going on here at the same time. You've got mythology, you've got history, you've got all this stuff. But these young people are already reading these works. So why? But then, of course, things like Star Wars and Star Trek and Tolkien, you could do that with as well. The idea taking something that people are already interested in, and then say, now you want to see something really cool. Let's peel back. What inspired this? Or what is this an allegory for? Or what do you think when you find out George Lucas said this was actually about this, right? And you can do the world religions, and you can do the philosophy, and you can do the history, and you can do the economics, and you can do this, that, and the other. And if you're interested in, if you're going into medicine, your research project could be how we ended up with a prosthetic arm inspired by Star Wars, right? And how the current work on prosthetic flesh that would cover the prosthetic arm is also inspired by Star Wars. And there's all sorts of ways you can go with that. I think basically I just wanted to do fun stuff. And I was already spending my time reading all of these things. And in my traditional history classes, I would bring in science fiction a lot anyway, because again, my argument was you can see what's happening in the time very clearly by looking at, H.G. Wells is really worried about this people. And that's a great mirror to what's going on, because if someone was paying attention to what was going on at the time, it was H.G. Wells. So the first time was a slipping it in because no one seemed to be really watching carefully to answer your question. And then it turned out people liked these classes. And so I was really fortunate that the people came back, and then also fortunate to find a place like, for example, Signum University that wanted graduate classes, particularly on speculative fiction sorts of topics. And so I got the invitation to talk to Signum through the undergraduate classes that I was teaching. So I guess that's a very meandering way to answer that. But I think I slipped in under the radar. And then once I was on the radar, people were signing up for the classes. And that was what was important.
I think that's brilliant. I think that's absolutely brilliant. I've since hearing your explanation, I've realized the error that I made was being an engineering major and not a humanities major. So now I know for next time. And I've got to throw you a surprise question that I didn't send to you ahead of time. In either Star Wars or Star Trek, or I don't know if we have time for both, who's your favorite character and why do you like them so much?
Oh, goodness, that's a really good question. Okay, I'll start with Star Wars because I think I've got probably a better handle on that one. It's really tough because I am a very much a character-driven person, so I have a lot of favorites. But I'm deeply interested in Qui-Gon Jinn as a character for Star Wars, and I think part of what's kept me so interested in him, besides the what ifs, the duel of the fates, what if Anakin had been trained by Qui-Gon? But Qui-Gon offered such an alternative to the Jedi Council becoming so ossified and sort of trapped in amber and forgetting why it was there. And I think a lot of that in the early books and discussions about Qui-Gon was related to this notion of the living force as opposed to sort of the cosmic force. The idea that you're not supposed to be using the force as a tool, you are supposed to let yourself be the tool used by the force. And there's a lot of, Buddhism there. There's a lot of mindfulness and a notion of a servant leadership there that you don't see in other Jedi. And the great Jedi that I can think of, the Mace Windus and Obi-Wan Kenobis and, you know, Yodas and fill in the blank, missed something that he understood. And I appreciate it makes sense that he had to be taken out of the equation because he wouldn't have, I don't think, taken part in the Clone Wars. He would have been a voice that that really disagreed strongly with where the Jedi as an institution went and may have left it all together as things changed. But I find him as this lone voice of an alternative path really compelling. And I also think it's a beautiful metaphor that the one Jedi who was most disinterested in self, the one who emptied himself and wanted most to be the empty vessel to be used by the Force, was the one who was first rewarded with his own individualism after death. He was the one who got that you know, that insight into how to exist after death and be, you know, the one who could then train Yoda and Obi-Wan afterwards how to remain in the Force. He was the one who would be most likely, you know, willing to sacrifice himself, and he was rewarded with himself after death. And I love that so much. So that would be my answer for Star Wars.
Oh, I have chills.
Let me tell you, I've given a lot more thought to Qui-Gon than I probably should.
I don't think there is any such thing as giving too much thought to this.
When you said you wake up every morning and think about who you'd like to be,
I want
to
be him.
Yes, I keep that what he represents in my head a lot, because I also think he was a great teacher in part, because he could let people who disagreed with him study with him, and he could recognize their greatness even when they disagreed. And that's something else I really value, is being a fellow traveler with students as opposed to, you know, try to be the boss of you.
Yeah. So as we're wrapping up here, I feel terrible that we've got to wrap up, but Zoom's going to be kicking me off here in a moment. We've got about 60 seconds. I'm gonna be Kai Rizdal for a moment and say, we have 60 seconds. Tell us real quick again, where can we find you on the internet? What are your social media handles?
I am online. My website, amyhsturgis.com. And you can find me on Twitter at drahsturgis. And I'm always looking to connect with my science fiction family. And I've enjoyed talking with you so much.
Oh, this was so magnificent today. Thank you so much, Dr. Sturgis.
Thank you. This has been a joy.
The Retro Rockets podcast explores the deep heritage of vintage and classic science fiction and fantasy. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. Our show is recorded, mixed, and produced by Andy Robbins. John Wenger is our special consultant. Our music is by Meter through Creative Commons license, and Carolyn Baker designed our logo. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time on Retro Rockets. Thank you.